And so we will read, starting in verse number 6 of the Song of Solomon, chapter 5. Before we do, there is a little bit of setup so that you know where this is. The Song of Solomon actually contains several characters that are ongoing throughout the song. One of them is called the Shulamite, that is the bride. And the bride is likened to us, the church, you and me. There is the beloved. The beloved is the king who is wooing the bride, who is in love with the bride. That's Jesus. And it is as Jesus is in love with us. It's a beautiful story. There are the daughters of Jerusalem as well. These are friends of the Shulamite, friends of the bride. They're watching. They're onlookers that are looking at the relationship that the Shulamite has with the king, the beloved. And we're going to pick up in the story. This is already chapter 5, so much is going on in this. The beloved, the king, has come to the Shulamite because he loves her and he wants to take her away. He comes to her, though, in the middle of the night. It's not the most opportune time. She's already in bed. She's already closed. She's already got the door locked. And she basically hesitates and says, "I'm not ready right now." And this is where we pick it up. Okay? So verse number 6 of chapter 5, it says this. She has a change of heart, and this is what happens. "I opened for my beloved, but my beloved had turned away and was gone. My heart leaped up when he spoke. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. The watchmen who went about the city found me. They struck me. They wounded me. The keeper of the walls took my veil away from me. I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, tell him that you tell him, I am lovesick." And this is how the daughters of Jerusalem respond. They said, "What is your beloved more than any other beloved, O fairest among women? What is your beloved more than any other beloved that you so charge us?" It's a fascinating story. Many implications for us today. Basically, what we see here is that there are watchmen. They're not part of the main characters. They're just these other characters that are going on that are part of the story. But watchmen represent people that should protect you. In fact, watchmen represent people of the church. In other parts of the Bible, in Isaiah 62, it basically says, "I have set watchmen on your walls, O Jerusalem, that shall never hold their peace. Day and night, they're going to cry out before them." And in fact, it goes on in the next verse, and it says, "Keep crying out until, keep, never give the Lord rest until he establishes Jerusalem." The watchmen are people of the church. In Ezekiel, he's actually called a watchman by God. God tells him, "You're a watchman for me." Watchmen are those men that are seated on the walls, and they're there to protect people. They're there to warn people. They're there for the benefit of people because they are given the job to be like an early warning system. They're like maybe the radar systems of today that would see an incoming threat and warn the people of the threat. These are the watchmen. But yet what we find here is that the watchmen do harm to the Shulamite. She's just going after her beloved. She's going after God. She wants to find God. And yet the people of the church, the watchmen, sometimes hurt other people of the church. In our day and age, this is how to compare these two things. Because sometimes people just trying to serve God, just trying to do what's right, just trying to get closer to God. And sometimes we get hurt. And sometimes we get hurt by the people that you would least expect it. Sometimes we even get hurt by the people who are supposed to be the ones that we're the safest, we're supposed to be safest with. Sometimes it's people of the church. Sometimes it's a relative. Sometimes it's a friend. But people
hurt other people.
And I'm sorry that the church has that reputation, and I'm sorry that the church does that to people. It's horrible that the church hurts other people when it happens all too often. And we know this, and many of you might have even experienced this through yourself or through a friend or through somebody that you love. You know that this happens, and it even happens here. And the Bible tells us it probably might happen somewhere in your lifetime to someone that you know. It's not right. There's no excuse for it, but it happens. The watchmen hurt, and they struck her, and they wounded her. And she even says, they took away my veil. And the veil was one of those things. You've all seen the Middle Eastern dress of women. They have these long veils, and they cover so much of their bodies, and it's basically considered like a shameful thing if they're exposed, and it basically to us represents either shame or embarrassment that happens to us in these situations. There is shame and there is embarrassment, and when the veil is removed, and it happens all too often in the church. Now what's amazing is her response through all of this. Because she has two things going against her at this point. She's been wounded by the watchman, and then the other thing that we see in the verse before is that she's looking for her beloved, but she can't find him. And what this means is, and how this relates to us, is often in the middle of problems. Often when we think that we need God the most, sometimes he's a little bit silent. And we might not be able to find him at those times. And we might be looking and we might be saying, where are you, God? Where are you? I need you at this time. Look, I'm hurt. I'm wounded. I have a need and I have something going on in my life, but I can't find you. I'm calling out to you, but I can't find you. Where are you at? And she's in this place where she's looking for her beloved, like we look for God, and sometimes it's like we don't know that he's around. We don't get the sense that he's around. Sometimes it seems like we're praying and we don't know where he's at. Is he going to answer? I don't see. When we want him to be most found, sometimes he's a little bit away and a little bit silent. It doesn't mean he's not there, but sometimes we can't find him. And what this creates is like a perfect storm to reveal the heart. This twofold situation that she has. She's wounded and she's hurt. And in the middle of her wound and in the middle of her hurt, she can't find her beloved. And it creates this situation where her heart is going to be revealed. Because in the middle of all of that, in the middle of all of her pain, she can't find the one that she believes she needs the most. Have we ever felt this way? Have we ever felt this way, that in the middle of a deep struggle, that God seems to be silent? Have we ever felt this way where we're calling out to God and we believe he needs to answer and he needs to answer now, but yet there's no answer that seems to be coming? This is the situation that she's in. And many of us have been in those situations in the past, and many of us might be in the situations even right now. That place where we're looking for God. And what it presents is the situation, because what people do with this is many times they either turn harder to God or they turn away from him at those times. They either continue to press in to find him or they turn away from him and say, well, he wasn't there when I needed him, and so I'm not going to go to him anymore. It creates this crossroads in our life which reveals our heart, which reveals where we are. It shows us in ourselves. It shows us in ourselves what our relationship with Him really is. Do we love Him because He's there for us and he can answer all of our prayers when we need Him? Or do we love Him because He deserves to be loved and He's a wonderful God to us? And it creates this situation when we have this, when we have a problem, and yet we can't always find Him in the situation. And what she does is actually quite amazing. In verse 8 it says this, "I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, tell him that I'm lovesick." What an amazing statement. In the middle of all of the situation that she's going through. Picture it. She's hurt. Maybe she's bleeding. It says she's wounded. She can't find her beloved. She's looking for her beloved. And she says this. She says, "If you find him, if you find him, tell him this. Tell him that I love him. Tell him that I'm lovesick for him. I want him so bad." You know what she doesn't? She doesn't say, "Tell him I'm hurt. Tell him I'm wounded. Tell him that people did me wrong. Tell him that I've been wronged. Tell him that his people did me wrong. He's the king. He has watchmen. Tell him that they did me wrong." She doesn't say any of that. She doesn't even mention, she says, "If you find him, the one thing I want him to know, the one thing that I want him to hear, the one thing that's important is tell him that I love him. That's the only thing that's important. Tell him that I love him so much that I can't go on without him. Tell him that I'm love sick inside me. Tell him that this is what's important to me. That I can't live without him. That I love him so much that the situations of the world don't matter. That my problems don't matter more than my love for him. That even if I don't understand what he's doing, that I love him." And we're in those situations all the time where we say, we don't understand why we're going through this. We don't understand why God is allowing this to happen to me. I don't understand how come I have to go through such a difficult thing. And in those times, our hearts are revealed. And her heart is revealed because she says, "I am lovesick. I don't care about all these other things. I care about my beloved." It's an incredible statement that she makes. It's an incredible statement of love, of devotion that she makes. Because at these times, many people turn to other things. They turn to looking in themselves and they say, "Well, if God's not going to do it, then I have to do something. If God's not going to do it, then I'm going to bury myself in my job to inoculate the pain. I'm going to bury myself in drinking because it's going to inoculate the pain. I'm going to bury myself in all kinds of things to escape." But she doesn't do any of that. She doesn't try and inoculate the pain. She says, "I am going to focus even more intensely on loving the one that loves me." It tells of the motives of our heart. And really, when we think about it, this is a prescription to get us through the difficulties of life. This, she is telling us, the attitudes that will get us through all the difficulties of life. She's saying, you keep your eyes focused on Jesus. You know we sing that song, "Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus"? Right? We sing that song, "Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus and the things of earth will go strangely dim." She's basically saying something similar. She's saying all the things of this earth, my wounds, my hurts, all of those things, they grow strangely dim as long as I keep my eyes on Jesus. Keep my eyes on the King. Keep my eyes on the Beloved. It's just another way of saying the same thing. And basically all of our problems, as we grow in our love for our God, will become strangely dim. As we become more and more love-sick, as the word she uses. I'm love-sick. As we become more love-sick for God, the things of earth will become smaller and smaller in comparison to who He is. It doesn't mean that they might go away. She's still wounded. She's still hurt. She still might have scars. She might have bruises. She might have cuts. But in light of all who He is, all of those things become smaller and smaller. She is telling us how to get through our issues and survive. Make God bigger and make your problems, and your problems will get smaller. She's not in denial. She's not in a place where she's ignoring all the issues. She's just choosing where she focuses. She's just choosing what she is going to focus on. She's choosing to focus on her love for God and God's love for her instead of choosing her focus to be on her issues. And this is the prescription that the Bible gives us, that we think on good things. We think on things of a good report. We don't think on things of a bad report. That is the tendency of us as human beings. We automatically think of all the bad things. We automatically think of all the bad things that could happen, all the things of a bad report. And the Bible says, don't think on those things. Think on the things of a good report. And we see that this is her example. I'm going to think on my Beloved. I'm going to think on the One who I'm lovesick for. And we could either turn to God or we could turn away. And then the amazing thing is in verse 9 is the response of others. Because remember, the daughters of Jerusalem are kind of her friends that are looking on. And we all have friends that are looking on as we go through difficult things, don't we? The people around us are always wondering, especially those who aren't sure about who this Beloved is. This God that we say that we love, this God that we say that we serve, this God that we say is so important to us. Often we could say things, but then our actions in the time of difficulty reveal quite a bit about what we really believe, and the people around us are smart enough to know that. And so when she tells her friends, if you find him, tell him this. And then their response is so telling. In verse number 9, they answer and they say, what is your Beloved more than any other Beloved, O fairest among women? What is your Beloved more than another Beloved that you so charge us? What they're saying is, who is this man? What is your Beloved? What is your Beloved? How can you respond this way? How can you have this reaction when you're hurt? How can you have this reaction when you look for him and you didn't find him? How can you have this? Who is this man? Who is this person that you call so beloved? Who is he? What is he? I want to know more about him. What is your Beloved? If this is how you respond, he must be something incredible. I've never seen anybody have this kind of reaction in this kind of circumstance. I need to know more about him. Who is he? What is he? I want to know him too. Tell me more about him. What is your Beloved? Is the response of people around. Now, if she fell apart, like sometimes we fall apart, and people around us see that we're falling apart, they might say, well, Your beloved is no different than any other beloved. This God that you serve is no different than any other God. You don't seem to depend on him any more than I depend on my money, or I depend on my intelligence, or I depend on all my connections. I depend on all kinds of things. You depend, and sometimes I get worried, and it looks like sometimes you get worried too. It's no different. But if we have that resolve where we say we're so in love with who God is and what he means to us, that we have this kind of reaction, the world will take notice and say, who's this God again? Who is this that you love so much? Why do you love him so much? And with that kind of love, it's an easy answer to answer those questions. She didn't rail at him. She didn't blame him. She didn't accuse him and say, you should have been here, but you weren't. You could have stopped this and you didn't. And her friends took notice. And they said, there is something very, very different about her relationship with the one that she calls her beloved. Her friends took notice, and they wanted to know, and they asked her again, what is he that you should so charge us? It seems like you're missing the point, woman. You're missing the point. You're hurt, and he wasn't here. They're saying, what is he? And she's saying, this is what you have to tell him. This is what you must tell him. I love him. And it creates a strong reaction in them to say, why is it that you love him? Some people don't like that response. Some people want you to be angry. Well, you should be angry. You have a right to be angry. You've been done wrong. You should be angry. And some people don't like this response, but it's the response that we would have if we love him greatly. And our friends see it. And our friends will be amazed by how we react in our difficult times, how we react to God, and how we respond to him. People are watching. People are watching if for good, and they're watching for negative as well. They're watching how we respond in our most difficult times. Do you remember there was a soldier at the cross when Jesus died, when Jesus was being crucified? Do you remember that? There was a soldier at the cross, and at the cross, when he died, do you remember the response of the soldier? The soldier, at the end, when he heard Jesus cry out his last breath and then he gave up his life, the soldier said, surely this man was the Son of God. Surely this man was the Son of God. He didn't say that about the thieves on the cross because the reactions were totally different. Jesus died there with strength and died there with dignity. He died there helping others even. And through his hardest time of life, people were watching him, and one person said, this man is different. He's probably that man, if that was his job, part of his job description, crucifying people. I'm not sure what the resume looks like when you send that out. But here's a man that probably was crucifying people on a weekly basis, monthly basis. I don't know how long. And the Romans crucified people regularly. Here's a man that was standing there watching this. Probably seen many people crucified. And this one man, he said, surely this man was the Son of God. Because he watched how he went through a difficult time and it made such an impression on him that he knew that this man was of God. And this is the opportunities that we have when we go through difficult things, that people would see that same light of God in us. As we go through our suffering, as we go through our difficult times, that they would see, surely this man, this woman is a child of God. Because they're watching. They're watching. They're watching. And just like the daughters of Jerusalem, if our response is, man, I love God, I don't care what happens to me. I love God, I don't care what happens to me. He's number one in my life. And I don't care about all my circumstances. And then maybe we'll get the same kind of response. Who is this God that he's so important to you? Who is this God that you care about him so much that everything else pales in comparison? What an impact it could have on the lives of those around us when they see that we are different because we have a strength, because we have an anchor, because we have someone to lean on. We can impact the world around us by showing them our love for God in the most difficult of times. If we don't have that love, then we need to ask God that he would increase our love for him. That's a prayer that I'm sure he's going to answer. I know that's according to the will of God. We ask God, I don't have that love. I don't have that love for you, but I want more. I want more. He will answer that prayer. He will answer that prayer. Jesus prayed that we should love the Lord with all of our heart, all of our mind, all of our soul. So that means it's the will of God that we love the Lord our God with all of our heart, with all of our mind, with all of our soul, with all of our body. That's the will of God. Jesus said that it will happen. So we could ask it. And we could be confident that it's the will of God. And when we know it's the will of God, the Bible tells us that he hears us and he will grant the petitions that we have desired of him. We could ask God that we love him more. We could go to him and admit to him, I know my love falls short, and I need to love you more. I want to be lovesick for you. This is not just for women, men. You could love and you could tell Jesus that you want to be lovesick for him. Doesn't sound very manly. You could tell Jesus that you want to be love is sick for him. This is a day and an hour when we need to love God more to get through the world and all of the things that it holds. And by doing it, we will show the world around us that our God is greater than anything that the world has to offer. Amen.